Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to part two of shoulder injuries. This is huge. Now, let's go over the ignored causes. Neurogenic. This means compromised nerves in the cervical spine. If you're looking at just working on the shoulder without restoring the nerve supply, the outcomes are not good. Vascular. If that head is forward or laterally deviated, you could compromise the blood supply going to and from that shoulder joint. And mechanical distortions of the thoracic area. You've got one bony attachment, the clavicle, but you've got 18 muscles that hold that shoulder up and down, gliding up on the thoracic area. So if you do have a thoracic deviation, that's going to negatively affect the shoulder function. Postural distortion is huge. Now, when you're looking at that, if that head is forward, you're compromising the blood supply and nerve supply to the shoulder. But in addition, if they're rounding over the shoulders, that's going to angle the scapula and completely alter the biomechanics of the shoulder. The postural distortions have to be fixed first. But let's see if you don't do that. Here's a study out of 2012. It shows a 57% failure rate in large rotator cuff repairs. So that means that over half of the time that they're doing the surgery, it didn't work. Large rotator cuff repairs retore at a rate of 57% in a series of 500 patients, according to the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons annual meeting. Let's look at the Journal of Orthopedic Sports and Physiotherapy, 1995. Posture in patients with shoulder overuse injuries in healthy individuals. The professional literature contains relatively few studies that have assessed the relationship between posture, function, and injury. Forward head position was significantly greater in the patient group rather than the healthy group. No other postural variables were related. Conclusion, inconclusive based on several confounding variables. Yes, because they're not just looking at the forward head carriage or the thoracic deviations or anything. Now, when you look at the Mayo Clinic, shoulder pain and impingement, muscle tightness or weakness imbalances associated with poor posture can cause the tendons in your rotator cuff to become irritated and cause pain and weakness. A forward hunched posture can cause these tendons to become impinged. Eventually, this can lead to a tear in the rotator cuff tissue, a more serious injury that can cause significant pain and weakness and limit your ability to carry out daily activities. Again, posture. Now, according to the American Journal of Orthopedic Factors Associated with Failed Rotator Cuff, first, the biologic failure, and this is the inability of the cuff to heal at the bone-tendon interface. Number one, poor quality of tissue. And that's poor blood supply, tendon atrophy, fatty infiltration, chronic tear, and degenerative changes. Infection, smoking, physiologic age, older age, diabetes, and non-steroidal anti-inflammatory use. Isn't that interesting? Because the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, they decrease proteoglycan, or the building block of cartilage. Those are the biologic failure factors. Now, mechanical failures. One, failure of fixation at the tendon-suture interface. Two, failure of fixation at the bone-anchor interface. Three, early aggressive rehabilitation. And four, noncompliance with post-operative rehabilitation plan. And five, infection. You're looking at, and then let's look at the American Journal of Orthopedic Factors associated, again, with failed rotator cuff. Causes of persistent shoulder pain in patients following a rotator cuff repair. Cervical spine pathology and radiculopathy. Absolutely. Suprascapular neuropathy. Again, that's the nervous system is compromised. Intra-articular conditions such as glenohumeral humeral arthritis, adhesive capsulitis, biceps, tendinosis. Tendinosis just means condition of the tendon. A dislodged suture anchor. Extra-articular conditions, such as persistent subacromial impingement, acromioclavicular joint arthritis, and failed rotator cuff repair. Again, if you're working on something and you have compromised blood supply or nerve supply to that, and I mean you're doing surgery, obviously it's not going to heal as fast. Let's look at the Journal of Arthroscopy, Arthroscopy 2015. Arthroscopic repair in chronic massive rotator cuff tears, a systematic review. There were 18 papers that met eligibility involving over 954 people with an average age of 63. 48% were female. The pooled re-tear rate was 79%. And now figure arthroscopic surgery, it's called minimally invasive, but they're only working on the shoulder. They're not addressing the cervical or thoracic impingement aspects or the neurologic aspects. And a re-tear rate of 79%? Bursitis. Bursa is the sacs that surround all the joints and the tendons, and it's there as a cushion. If your head is forward, you're compromising the fluid flow to that bursa sac. And if the fluid is not in there, then that sac gets compressed, and then you develop friction, and that friction can damage the tissue, creating inflammation. And that's where the itis comes from. That's why we recommend getting that curve in the neck back, but also applying moist heat. Moist heat will instantly, it's going to artificially put fluid in that joint. Just think, if you put heat on your arm and take it away, what color is your arm? Your arm's red, because the brain senses that increase in temperature and increases blood flow to that area to equalize the temperature. So you're forcing blood flow in there. And while you're correcting the cervical spine, you're allowing that bursa sac to fill up with fluid. Now, calcific tendinosis, present, and how do you diagnose it? Now, degenerative calcification is often seen on scans of the rotator cuff and part degenerative tendinopathy of the tendons. Now, where is this coming from? Subacromial impingement due to rotator cuff dysfunction from the calcification and the space occupying calcific deposits in this supras and infraspinatus tendons. Persistent achy pain due to the pressure effects of large calcific deposits in the cuff, and acute severe onset of unremitting disabling pain due to chemical inflammation from the leakage of calcium crystals in the subacromium bursa or glenohumeral joint. It drives me crazy when they call it calcification, because it's not, it's mineralization. If you use a structure beyond its design capabilities, okay, where ligaments are supposed to be strong and flexible, but if they're always in a distorted view and you compromise the blood supply and nerve supply, and you're taking, say, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, which limit the building products of cartilage, the proteoglycan production, the body's got to rebuild it out of something. So it's going to use cheaper mineralized matrix material. Now you can see here, and the obviously forward head carriage, 38 millimeters. But look at the normal shoulder on the right and look at the pathology shoulder on the left. What you're seeing is there's extra mineralization of the capsular ligament, because the capsular ligament is just supposed to hold fluid inside of that joint. And if you compromise the biomechanics, the blood supply and nerve supply because of forward head carriage, or some other nutrient deficiency, or you're trying to drug the person, the body is going to start to use that capsular ligament as a structural component. And that's where you get that degenerative changes. You can even see the socket, that glenoid fossa, is literally distorted. And so the bone is going to distort to match that. So obviously, you've got to remodel the whole structure. And luckily, bones are alive, so they can remodel. And then the perfect example here. So we're looking at loss of cervical curve, the head's forward, 29 millimeters, that's over an inch. But look at the thoracic deviations. This was never addressed. And obviously, you can see they replaced the shoulder joint with an artificial one. But again, that scapula is going to be riding up that thoracic area. And that thoracic area is not going to be conducive to smooth scapular movement. And, you know, the outcome of this is not good unless you fix it. Now, general complications from any operation. Well, pain happens with every operation. Stiffness after the shoulder surgery is not uncommon, can occur approximately in 10% of the people. It's post-operative frozen shoulder. Now, post-operative frozen shoulder is more common after rotator cuff repairs in older people. In most cases, it improves with physiotherapy, but sometimes a steroid injection, hydrodilation, or manipulation under anesthesia and capsular release is required. And almost all stiffness is generally gone by 1 year after surgery. But again, they're not addressing the cause, which is going to be the forward head carriage or thoracic deviation. Bleeding is common during or after surgery. Infection is common. And nerve injury is rare. But with most shoulder operations, and larger operations have a higher risk, such as revision shoulder replacement. And you can also have complex fractures after the surgery. A lot of complications in the surgery. So now here's a close-up of what we just saw. Now this is a 49-year-old Marine. I mean, tough, tough guy. Multiple explosions. He was told he needed both shoulders and both knees replaced. Luckily, we were able to help him with the curve in the neck. Now, this is a before and after of his cervical spine. You can see a negative 4-degree reverse curve in the neck, 38 millimeters forward head carriage. And then after that, we were able to correct it and reduce the forward head carriage from 38 millimeters down to 27 and start to restore that curve. Now we can reform that shoulder labrum, even though the socket, the fossa, everything is distorted, but you can see that bone is remodeling to adapt to that distorted fossa. So as long as we can retain the integrity of the structures there, the body can remodel to that distorted humeral head and give him better range of motion where he can actually use the living joint. So when we talk about correcting and restoring the health, five keys. Number one, nerve supply, because if you have compromised blood supply or nerve supply to that area, it's not going to work. And with your talking failure rates of over 50% in some, over 70% in others, they're not addressing the underlying cause. Regular exercise. This means the corrective exercises to restore that labrum, but also exercise to restore the curve in the neck, exercises and adjustments to restore the thoracic deviations. Everything is, you've got to move your joints, and you only got to move the joints you want to keep. Proper nutrition. This means if man makes it, you don't eat it. And you're just talking, I tell everyone, you want to eat the way your great-great-grandparents ate, because they ate nothing but organic, healthy, free-range, seasonal, basically free from preservatives. And then sufficient rest. Rest is when the body regenerates. If you're not sleeping, you're not going to regenerate. And then prayer and meditation. Having a relationship with God is amazing, okay? But you've got to add prayer. In every study, and this is science, my friends, this is data and facts. Every study you add prayer in, the healing occurs more rapidly. God bless you. Realize that your body is self-healing and self-regulating. If you have a shoulder injury or have had a shoulder injury, look at why. It wasn't just the fall. You look at the nerve supply, forward head carriage, thoracic deviations, and by restoring that, then you get the best chance to regenerate that fossa and those shoulder structures. Stay healthy, my friends. God bless you.